From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Deepak Bhatt, Senior Associate Editor for ACC.org, filling in for the one, the only, Dr. Kim Eagle with part two of this week's Eagle's Eye View. Today, we're coming to you from the TCT meeting in Denver with some very exciting clinical trials that could have an impact on the way you practice medicine. I met up with my partner in crime, Dr. Peter Block, from Emory University, and we will be discussing some of the important trials and studies that were presented here, including the STEMI-DAPT trial, and just talking about shorter and longer durations of DAPT in general, the Tendyne apparatus, but just talking about mitral valve technologies as they are coming into clinical evaluation and maybe even practice, and then the FAME studies and talking about cost effectiveness of FFR and where FFR and IFR may fit into clinical practice. So a bunch of different studies that I think will impact how we view cardiovascular medicine in the coming years.
I'm Peter Block in Denver, Colorado at TCT for On the Scene. And with me is Deepak Bhatt, who is from the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and it is a wrap-up now of day 3 and 4 at TCT. Deepak, we've had a lot of fascinating data, lots of good trials that have been presented. Now we should talk about dual antiplatelet therapy in ST segment elevation myocardial infarction. Perhaps a little different than the other dual antiplatelet trials because we're dealing with unstable plaque or what have you, something funny, bad that happened to the artery. What do you think about the outcomes of this trial?
Yeah, great question. And you're right, there's been a lot of interesting data presented at the meeting so far in a couple of trials looking at shorter versus longer term DAPT here as well. You know, both are well done, interesting trials, but both were actually quite underpowered. So I'm not sure that there's anything immediately actionable. That is, we already know you can shorten the duration of DAPT with current second generation DS if you have to. You know, is it okay to do it in everybody? Larger trials are ongoing to answer that question about whether we can tweak the duration. But for now, with second generation DS DAPT, if someone opens up a bleed, you know, already I would stop the DAPT sooner rather than later. So. Yeah. And if they're high ischemic risk, I'd continue it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the interesting thing. I mean, you can say, well, okay, it's okay to stop at 3 months, but if somebody bleeds earlier, you're not going to continue it. And in fact, we know that stents now are so good that we can probably get away with it with a little luck. The interesting thing is, to me, if you think that dual antiplatelet therapy is good for patients that have atherosclerotic disease and you want to, quote unquote, treat the atherosclerotic disease with DAPT, then you're going to keep it up anyway.
Absolutely, and I think it's particularly true for ACS patients, including STEMI patients as a subgroup of that, where if you've ruptured your plaque once, you know, that risk continues in the future. Yeah, you know, you stop smoking, you start them on a stent, and you do all the other right stuff, but I think there's still some added benefit as a number of other larger studies and meta-analyses have confirmed. So, you know, I think for now I wouldn't change anything based on these studies.
Yeah. Okay, moving on, the mitral valve replacement. It's one of my hobbies now, and it's interesting to see how difficult the mitral valve is compared to the aortic.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and it's more than a hobby. Obviously, you're an expert in the field, but it has been slow progress. I think that's okay, though. I think we don't want to jump the gun here. I think there's still a lot of refinement needed in the technology, and then, you know, randomized trials and adequate numbers of patients before any of this is ready for prime time.
Yeah, the Tendyne trial is really just 30 patients, not very many patients. It works. I mean, there's no question that Tendyne is probably a pretty good valve, and in some patients seems to make a lot of difference in reduction of mitral regurgitation. I worry about Tendyne because patients with MR have usually dilated left ventricles, and if you put a hole at the left ventricular apex, I can't imagine that's good for the left ventricle. But you have to do that with Tendyne. On the other hand, the outcomes are pretty good. And although the numbers are a little higher in terms of the bad outcomes, I'd like to see them in the low single digits. Nonetheless, I think we have a peek into the fact that we need better engineering, we need more sophistication, and a little bit of good luck going forward to make mitral valve replacement, either transcatheter or as a combined procedure, a reality. Still
yeah,
not there.
I agree. I mean, there are a lot of competing or maybe complementary technologies out there. All of them are still, I think, in an early stage of development. But, you know, this was true of TAVR when it was first getting off the ground. There were skeptics there and so forth. So I'm actually very optimistic about the field. But I think we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
And by long way, I mean several years.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, but it is an interesting peek in possibly into the future.
Right.
Okay, moving on to FAME. The FAME business now has been looked at from an economic point of view, and this is very interesting stuff.
I agree. I mean, I think hemodynamic guided assessment of ambiguous lesions is very useful in daily practice, and I think the entire series of FAME trials have really helped put FFR, and by extrapolation I'll say even IFR, on the map. And, you know, assessing the lesion severity and stenting only those that really need to be stented, I think improves clinical outcomes, reduces resource utilization, and now we see is very cost attractive as well. I mean, some of the early data didn't look quite as good, but like many things, it takes a little while, a little time for the cost and even efficacy data to settle out.
Yeah, 3 years, the lines now cross over are exactly at the same point, and it looks like the patients that have FR will continue to go in a positive direction, whereas those that did not will cost more. And that's good news for the FFR folks. There is another trial that I want to mention, and that is the non-invasive FFR business that has come up. And there is now good data that showed that you can, in fact, figure out hemodynamics, the physiology of a stenosis, without doing either CT, giving contrast, or putting a wire down. And that's, I think, very important data. The reason is that the whole philosophy of what we are doing is trying to not do what we are doing, right? In 5 years, I think we're not going to be doing CAS in order to do physiology measurements. It's all going to be non-invasive, and we're already there with CCTA, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is a look into the future, and particularly for underdeveloped countries that can't afford FFR wires, this is a great concept of how to figure out whether a stenosis is or is not important.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of exciting technologies that are looking at it. Of course, I think FFR, IFR, there's still a lot of room for further development, further iteration. But beyond that, you know, the CTFFR, I think, is very interesting, needs some more data there, and there's some cost issues with that. So that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate for non-industrialized nations. But still, the science is really exciting. Even using QCA to help determine what the flow might be, some data here about that. So I think we're going to really hear a lot more about ways of assessing hemodynamics and coupling it with the anatomy.
Yeah, I keep saying that if we do our job right, we won't have a job, but that's that's not necessarily bad.
No, I think it could be like a lot of things that are going on in the broader interventional sphere where there's non-invasive assessments that refine what we do in the cath lab, so we do maybe less diagnostic work and more interventional work.
Yeah. And it also, for those where we can't be sure, it tells us, look, we can't be sure, it probably is better to put an FF wire down.
Absolutely.
Yep. So there it is, a wrap up for day 3 and 4. Thank you, Deepak.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to Eagle's Eye View, your weekly CV update from ACC.org, all of which can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. So please go ahead and find us online or wherever you get your podcasts.